I'm an expert. That's why they pay me the big bucks. They don't pay me big bucks? Oh, no. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
And hey, I'm Ian Boothby.
And today I'm wearing... Do I sound different? Do I sound different to everyone?
Do I sound different?
I'm wearing a mask.
Oh!
Because I'm robbing you.
Oh, I thought... Okay. I thought you were just putting on your real thick Canadian accent.
Real thick. Yeah, no, I'm not putting on any kind of Canadian accent, but not intentionally. I'm sure I'm using a Canadian accent, but I don't believe there is a Canadian accent, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we're normal.
We're normal.
That's right.
We're like Greenwich Mean Time in terms of language.
Sure.
Or dialect, regional dialects.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And then, everyone else is a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hear an American speak, you're like, I don't know what he's saying. Can't understand him.
Nope.
But he's from Washington. I don't know. He said y'all. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, people can't, from in other parts of the world, can't understand me because I don't have an accent. And so my voice doesn't register to their foreign ears.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's the weird thing. When you go to another country,
yeah,
like say you're talking to someone in Scotland, right?
Scotland, yeah.
And you're talking to a Scottish person.
Okay.
They don't realize they're a foreigner.
No.
They think
yeah,
they're the normal thing.
That's right.
Isn't that weird? Like you go there and like, you guys, you got a whole country of foreigners
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, I'm the domestic. It's just weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Don't you find it relaxing hearing a voice
that's
normal? And you say that in a bar at midnight.
Yeah.
And that's how you end up in the lock. You'll be meeting Nessie tonight, they say. And I'll go, I don't understand you with that thick accent.
I can't understand you.
Have you guys ever thought of talking normal?
What a more neutral accent like ours.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is how I burn bridges with our Scottish fans.
Well, you're not burning bridges, which is worse.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Then they get really upset.
Yeah. It's basically...
Whatever they are.
Yeah, our audience are basically people from Scotland and Australia. So I think going after accents is the way to go right off the top of the show. Well, we also got friends in Texas.
Oh.
So once again, accents.
Yeah.
Just go hard against the accents.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're wearing a mask, as you said, and I'm wearing a mask.
Yeah, copycat.
And that just made me think of the, because, you know, this is on brand with us. There's a little touch of nostalgia
okay.
to our show.
All right.
You know, we sometimes talk about the oldie times.
Yes, good old
this
days.
Isn't really your oldie times. But in 1985, there was a TV show called Mask that I always thought, like, boy, that not The Mask.
Yeah, yeah.
Though that did, was also a TV
was
show.
It, was he like a spy or a criminal and he could change his face?
Okay, that's not... okay, no.
Not Mission Impossible.
Not in the slightest.
Okay.
This was like, Mask was like a G.I. Joe type team.
Okay.
The name stood for something. The letter stood for something. What's that, an acronym?
An acronym, yes.
Is that, that's a Dan acronym? That's a Canadian one?
That's right. Once again, no accent.
Yeah, Dan Aykroyd, no accent.
Yeah, no accent.
You hear Bill Murray talking.
Oh my God, who can understand
what's
him?
Going on? And then Dan Aykroyd comes on.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Except for Americans listening and going, oh, now I'm deaf. I don't understand this at all.
What's going on? It's all silence.
Right.
And last thing I heard was dub airs.
Right. And then Slimer comes on with a thick Newfoundland accent.
That's the only Canadian accent that can be understood off of.
The Newfoundland?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what Slimer sounds. If you're wondering what's Slimer's accent, it's Newfoundland.
Yeah, Newfoundland accent.
Yeah. Like, oh, hey, blah, 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 blah. That's Slimer.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. But the TV show Mask stood for, I'll tell you, because you can't guess this.
Wait.
Oh, unless you want to guess it.
Sure.
Okay, they're a military team.
Okay.
The whole idea behind this was to sell toys.
Okay.
As you know, you do.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It was a French-American production put together by Deke, D-I-C, which was also the company that did the real Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of Ghostbusters.
They also made Deke pens.
No, that's not at all what they're called. No.
Oh,
and don't even get started on the Deke lighters. what did Mask, M-A-S-K,
stand for?
I was surprised during the times of COVID that they didn't try to bring back Mask.
Yeah, yeah. So, the M.
Yes.
Does it stand for military?
No, it doesn't.
Does it stand for mission?
No, but they do get around. Does that help you? They go around.
Oh, the mobile?
Huh?
Army?
What was it? Mobile?
Mobile?
Yes, that's correct.
Not army? Not it's artillery?
Not army. They are not in the army.
Oh, okay. They're not in the, so
but they
not,
do protect themselves.
Oh, well. Okay, so mobile, armored.
Yes.
Surgical? No.
Oh, it's something that would be a surgical something. A surgical...
Surgical...
We're gonna attack these guys with a surgical...
Strike.
Yes.
Strike? Oh, but...
what have you got so far?
So we got mask?
You got mask, right, which stands for...
Mobile?
Yes.
Armored?
Yes.
Strike?
Yes. Here comes the K.
Which is weird.
Okay, now I got...
Because not force.
Wait a second.
It should be military strike force, or military mobile armored strike
so
force.
So that would be massive.
Yeah, but that would
be... force. That doesn't
be
work.
Too hard to... Yeah, it wouldn't work.
Okay,
so,
now, but I got to remind you of something that I'm sure you've forgotten.
Okay, about this show, yeah, yeah.
This...
Oh, wait, koalas.
Oh, no, that's not, no, again, okay. You've forgotten something very important.
Shoot.
About the 80s.
Oh.
The 80s was a time...
Yes.
That if you went to...
Dr. Kevorkian.
Oh,
mobile
okay, you're on the right track with...
Strike Kevorkians?
Strike Kevorkians. no, if you went to...
But it can't be like kill.
No, again, you're not remembering the 80s. Wait, let me fill you in.
Okay.
If you went to a comedy club...
Yes.
In the 80s...
Sure. Cocaine spelled with a C, not a K.
Not in the 80s, it wasn't. This is what I'm trying to tell you, brother, is that things in the 80s, like comedy, were spelled with a K.
Oh, okay.
Because it was
cool
to spell things that were spelled with a C with a K.
Sure.
So that's your clue.
So is
that
it
this
like,
is something that would traditionally be spelled with a C, but because it's 1985.
Yeah, it's not core. Spelled, it's not like.
It's not core. That's a good guess.
Okay.
That's
okay.
A very good guess.
Okay.
But it's mobile armored strike. It's
something
it would
with
be
a K.
C word that's instead been changed to a K.
That doesn't throw me off at all. Okay, so mobile armored strike command?
Yes.
Oh.
That's absolutely right. Mobile armored strike command. Now, are you relaxed enough to go for the villain's name?
Okay.
So the villain, it's a criminal organization.
Sure.
It's not another country.
Do they have an acronym as well?
Yes, they certainly
do. Oh, okay. Okay.
They didn't come to an acronym fight without an acronym. What do you think they brought? An antonym?
I don't know.
So that would be, what would be the antonym? Nude? I guess one is masked and the other is nude. Wait, but then what's an eyes wide shut party? Ah, forget it. Anyway, their name is Venom.
Venom.
Also an
okay,
acronym.
Villain?
Well, no, that's pretty good.
Okay.
That's pretty good. And I would normally go with that, but no. It's how they act.
So
they're
violent?
They are violent.
Oh, wait.
This is a tougher one.
Oh, okay. They're how they act with a V. They're villains.
Maybe they would have a leader named Sid.
Oh, so they're vicious.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So the E is probably simple for you because, you know. They're an organization. We got to say what their stand on things is.
Okay, so evil?
Yes. Okay, so now we're getting to the N.
Oh, boy.
This is their organization. This is how they describe their organization.
I see. Network.
Yes. So it's a vicious, evil network.
Of?
Of is correct as
okay.
well.
Okay.
Of what? What is the final thing in Venom that's the M?
Are they murderers?
Murderers. That's what they were. It was Saturday morning TV, and they were a vicious, evil network of murderers. And every day, they would go out and they would murder, and then the mask crew would come along and go, son of a bitch, they did it again. And,
is it a twist? Is it a villainous, evil network of mask?
No.
It would be a twist.
And they do, and this word actually does use the letter M as their first letter.
Sure.
You know, the others, because they're not cool like mask.
I don't remember
so
there being
they
any
wanna,
M
like,
change.
Basically, you know, okay, if you were a Saturday morning cartoon,
you
couldn't do murders.
Yes, yes. So mayhem?
Yes. Put it all together. What are they? What's
so
Venom?
Villainous evil network
no,
of...
No,
sorry?
It wasn't villainous.
Oh,
it
is villain?
No. You guessed it
oh,
right.
Oh, vicious. Sorry. Vicious evil network of mayhem.
Thank you. Thank you. That's all I was looking for. Perfect. Anyway, that was a show called Mask.
Huh.
And there's a very small percentage of people listening to this going, hey, they're talking about Mask.
Very small. I don't even remember that show.
Right.
But I think I'd given up on Saturday morning cartoons at that point in my life.
Okay.
This is like mid-80s, right?
Yeah, I think I was still, I think we had VHS, so I was taping stuff, but I was sleeping in.
Yeah, I know. I had trouble getting up. I had trouble getting up for the Frantics. I had to have my alarm set so that it turned on at whatever time that was, 11 o'clock, I think.
Yeah, also that was the first year I had a girlfriend.
Oh.
So, you know, there was also shenanigans afoot.
So, that seems like a good reason to sweep Mask under the rug.
Yeah, sorry, Mask. You can't compete with shenanigans. And shenanigans, of course, is an acronym as well.
Oh, wait. So sexy hijinks everywhere network.
Network. Anigans. No, it just goes to that. Again, not to be confused with the Mask cartoon, which was
about a kid, about a boy with a horrible...
Yeah.
Problem with his face. And,
yeah, and yeah. Cher is his mom.
Cher is his mom. And his father was? Oh, I can't remember.
Sonny Bono.
No. No. That's wrong.
But I remember it was, you know, it was a charming
movie.
I don't think
there was a dad in the picture, I think.
Okay.
She was by herself.
All right.
It was kind of a charming movie, but
sure, it was fine.
It felt like...
What are you going to do?
But when you look back at it now, you're like, well, they're just hanging around all these bikers. That doesn't seem very healthy.
Mm.
You know, like, that's not a great way to... I thought there was a weird article in the paper this week.
Why don't you tell me about it?
Well, this was the headline. Bad year for Hell's
Bikers?
Angels. Bad year for Hell's Angels.
Okay.
And it seemed to be like the way it felt.
Wait a second. Let me check my broker. How much money did we put into Hell's Angels? Everything.
Oh, no.
How much did Toys for Tots make? God damn it.
It's a charity.
I lost it all. A charity? Oh, can I write it off? The Hell's Angels stole the money. Okay, so tell me more about the Hell's Angels.
Yes, their Toys for Tot attempt to polish their image. No, it was just like, I guess it's been a bad year. They've lost three clubhouses to civil forfeiture because of criminal activity within those clubhouses.
And who's doing the criminal activity?
The Hell's Angels. They're like a big drug dealer. Huh. Big drug dealers, right?
Okay, so cause and effect?
Cause and effect.
Right.
Do bad things happen. But it just seemed like a weird article because it was like, am I supposed to be like,
side?
Am I supposed to be reading this and going like, oh, poor Hell's Angels. Jeez, a gang of murderous thugs who deal drugs and they're having a bad year. Gosh, is this the way the headline came across? The article didn't feel that way, but the article is more like, what are they going to do? Like, what is their next step, or next stage or whatever?
Yeah, bad year for adorable gangsters. Ones with, you know, cigars and nashy. Yeah, those guys. Hey, you mugs.
Because
we're gonna get the Batman, she. But they don't hurt like regular people, so you're like, ah, it's fine.
Yes, they don't hurt like regular people. That's true.
I was just trying to see the movies that Cher did.
Okay.
You know, and
some pretty respectable films in there.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't do a lot, but what she did, she, you know, she chose pretty well with her projects.
Yeah. What do you think was her first?
Was it Silkwood?
Okay, that was one of her first breakout ones.
Okay.
But what was her first dramatic, real kind of... Because she did Wild on the Beach, Good Times, and Chastity.
Oh, okay.
Those are all 60s films and not really that style.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, what was the first one? She did one more before then. This is a tough one to guess.
Yeah.
Let's see. It was based on a play. I'll tell you the other actors that were in it.
Okay.
Karen Black.
Okay.
Kathy Bates.
All right.
Sandy Dennis.
A lot of ladies.
Directed by Robert Altman.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Health?
No.
No, not The Wedding. Not Three Sisters. Not, or Three Women or whatever it's called.
It's based on a 1976 play, which once again does not help.
Oh, right. That's during his play period when he did True West and whatever. I don't know. Sorry.
Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean.
Oh, I should know that one with my Robert Altman knowledge.
Right. So then we went to Mask, as you have. And then she did a movie with Dennis Quaid and Liam Neeson and John Mahoney.
Dennis Quaid and Liam Neeson. Oh, it's like a legal procedural kind
of thing? Yes, it is. It's a legal mystery thriller. Uh-huh. Directed by Peter Yates. I don't know if that helps in any way.
Not much.
Not helping at all.
Does it have legal in the title?
It does not. It's a one-word title.
One-word title.
Oh. It also has the same title as a play you and I saw together that we discussed either last week or the week before.
Oh,
same
really?
Same title.
Really?
Unrelated. Completely unrelated.
Yeah.
This play also had our friend Louise Moon in it.
That's right. And now I can't remember. I can't remember.
Suspect.
Ah.
Okay. Now we're moving along.
My gosh.
After that, this one's kind of a fun one.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. Yeah. Little naughty fun. Good times.
Okay.
Naughty. Women are empowered.
All right.
What do we got going on there? What do you think? 1987.
Women empowered in 1987?
Yeah.
With Cher in it?
Yep.
Who else is in it?
Well, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, the witches of Eastwick.
Harder to say than you remember.
Very directed good. By George Miller.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
You know, good for George Miller.
His only studio job.
Really?
Yeah.
And he disliked working with the studios too much?
Well, I think I talked about it on the show before, but if you don't remember the story, remember the story I told you about John Peters showing up with a guy dressed as an alien?
Yes.
That was on the set of The Witches of Eastwick.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, and then she did a bunch more stuff.
Yeah.
But she actually did one of my favorites right after that. And that's, you know, then we're going to get into Tea with Mussolini and, you know, Burlesque. She did
Beaches, didn't she? Or is that?
Nope.
It makes it, oh, maybe I'm thinking of Bette Midler then.
You are thinking of Bette Midler.
Ugh.
Yeah. But this was a good movie from 1987.
Moonstruck?
Yeah.
That's a very good movie. What's good about that movie?
Lots of things, but go ahead.
It's crazy.
It is, and then it's all settled at a table where they all just like sit down and just go, you know, how about this? And like, yeah, you're right. Okay, well, don't do that anymore. I won't. Okay, and you know something about you? Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
It must have been a play.
Yes, it smells like a play.
Yeah, because John Patrick Shanley was a playwright, and then he wrote a.
It must.
He wrote a killer script that. That could
I'm
be
not
the,
seeing
could be
that
the
it
night.
Was a play, though.
Okay. But I think he was a playwright.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And then he probably took, you know, some of that you know, that writing style crept into that movie where he's got a... It's weird that... Was it that Norman Jewison movie?
Was it
Norman Jewison?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird that Jewison wouldn't say, like, can we, like, maybe make this a bit more dynamic? Maybe he just thought, oh, this is fine.
But I just love that they all
Big
just
hams.
Talk it out at the end. Just, yeah. just sit around and just, like... Hey, don't cheat on me anymore. I won't. That was dumb. Because you know what? You're going to die one day. You're right. I'm going to die one day. And then, you know, and Nicolas Cage is so good in it. And it's just that kind of start of the, hey, Nicolas Cage is a bit off. You know, and
I think that movie kind of ruined Nicolas Cage in a way. Because after that, he stopped being an actor and just kind of became a character.
Well, what was he before that was like...
Well, I think he was like attempting to be a serious actor or had like, you know.
Okay. Is that ruining to be making bold choices?
Well, I don't know. After a while, it becomes kind of, I mean, as someone who's gone to see movies with Nicolas Cage in
yes.
them and the audience is whooping and hollering with laughter
right.
at his performance, I would say that ruined it. Like if you become a laughing stock because of the choices you make, then.
But I think he still can snap back and like do,
oh, yeah.
do the straight stuff. And
I
then
think that's true.
Yeah. So I would say ruined is probably not, you know, he's
stuff. No. He was one of the better presenters at the Oscars.
Yeah.
I thought he did a good job there.
Yeah.
It felt personal.
Yeah. And that's
good.
I have done this?
Yes. Yes,
yeah,
I would.
But
you did it. Of course.
Yeah, and they're having a good time with that.
That's great.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. A lot of them felt kind of a little too rote. They're obviously looking at the cue cards. You know, whatever.
It was a very settled down Oscars for the most part. It was well done, but
yeah.
I thought it was like a very settled down. There wasn't any, chaos moments.
Until the very end.
What would happen at the very end?
Al Pacino, yeah, with his rather bizarre, not saying and the Oscar goes to, just saying, I have the envelope
what I'm
here.
Seeing here is I'm not believing.
Oppenheimer? And he says with a question mark, and then the audience is like, should we... acknowledge this because we've had an embarrassing
yeah.
moment in the past.
La La Land. Like, oh, you got the same envelope. They did acknowledge that like just before then.
Yes.
Yeah. Which was
Jimmy,
good.
Yes. Kimmel made a little joke about it. Yes. Yeah, it was not bad. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. I thought his monologue was so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're kind of reacting a little to the Joe Coy Golden Globes thing.
I never saw that.
Okay.
I never saw it. So.
Well, I think America is reacting to the Joe Coy thing where it just got like
yeah.
so just like mean and chaotic. And it was like, keep it calm, keep it kind.
I was reading somewhere that the people who are the victims of the barbs are have to okay them.
Do they?
Yeah.
Is that just so they can know where to put the camera?
Yeah, and know to react to them and stuff like that, and not be gone or doing something else. So yeah, so they're in on it. So they do okay them.
Yeah,
and I think it's fun that Robert Downey Jr. played along with a joke that's pretty hack.
You know? Well, he's walked out of interviews when people bring up like.
Yeah, I don't blame him because it's just hack. Like, well, we know, like, okay, you know, this is old history now. I mean, it's been whatever 20 years since this happened, like, or more now. It just feels like he walked through the valley of death. He got out the other side, and there's no need to drag him back in.
Yeah, it depends what your perspective on it is. If you think it's dragging him back in, or if you think it's like how far you've come.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was a thing like Jimmy Kimmel was bringing up was like 20 years ago, you were playing this. It was like not a great role. It was like the villain in some kid's movie or something.
Sure.
Lucky to have it.
Yeah.
And then, then, you know, all the Marvel stuff and then this and holy moly.
But he also made the, you know, it's not your highest achievement.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Which, you know.
It's fine.
It is fine. I don't think, you know, it's... Yeah, is it mean?
I just don't see the point to it. Because there's other jokes you can make. Because
I think the Robert... Okay, here I do think, like...
Why didn't they bring up the fact that he played a puppy in Pound? No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Pound puppies. Was that a Saturday morning show? I know it was a toy line.
Yeah, what did Pound stand for? Personal?
Yeah, I think at this point, because...
Pet.
You know, if you're interviewing Robert Downey Jr. and you bring up the drug stuff, and you shouldn't have been bringing up the drug stuff, then I see why you're walking out, because you're trying to get a scandalous kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you're doing this at a moment where Robert Downey Jr. is kind of at his highest point, he's like had all the Marvel success, and now he's nominated for an Academy Award. Probably gonna win. We can bring it up now because now it's the end of a.
We gotta knock him down a peg. This guy's getting too big for his britches.
It actually brings you up a peg. I feel myself.
Yeah.
Because it's like you were having a really hard time and you got through that and look at where you are now. That's fantastic. It's not. But don't forget
where you were.
Yeah.
Don't forget your low points.
Yeah.
Fully enjoy your high points.
Yeah. Yeah. Run that clip from less than zero. See this? This wasn't acting, folks. They just let the camera run. And then that was where he got his thing from. Yeah. No, I thought it was, for me, it was like, oh, yeah, that was one of the tighter Oscars. They were like keeping it.
They kept it rolling and it was good.
Yeah.
There's a couple horrible moments. The Melissa McCarthy, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just, I mean... Here's the thing.
It's just a misfiring joke.
It's a misfired joke, but it's also, like, I don't want to be mean to Melissa McCarthy, but she's not a funny person. She's a funny actress.
Okay.
And she performs very well in comedy. But I don't think she's creatively funny. Like, I don't think she can improvise into humor. I think Judd Apatow movies prove that as well, where you just let the camera run and you just do something, Melissa. That wasn't too helpful. But yeah, so...
Well, I think Bridesmaids shows that's not true. Most of that stuff was like...
Was it improvised?
Yeah, yeah. It's a Judd Apatow movie. No, it isn't.
No, it's not. It's a Christian
Right,
Christian
but
Feig
they
movie.
Also have the similar methods. And that was a lot of...
It's a Paul Feig movie.
Yeah. I mean, when you take it all the way to Ghostbusters, too far. Bring your way back. And Judd Apatow just like lets things run... Too much, but okay. Yeah. But you're saying she's not like funny creatively.
Yeah, she's not like to me. She's not like a person who can like improvise and be amusing and stuff like that. She's good with like stuff material she's given and performs very well.
She's really good on Saturday Night Live.
Okay, I don't watch it obviously, but yeah.
Okay, you know if she was like when she was playing Sean Spicer, it was just a wrecking ball. Like,
yeah,
it was
just
holy shit, next level. And the first time
she's good at physical humor and stuff like that. Like,
the first time she was on like Saturday Night Live, it was just, Jesus, okay, yeah, there you go. But I don't know really what the difference is then between not a funny person, but a funny actor.
Well, I would say the same thing about Harold Lloyd, is that he was a person who acted funny, but wasn't a funny person. He was a person who knew, this is like a persona I can play.
Right.
And I will, you know, hire people who will write funny jokes for me. And then I will be funny.
Right.
You know, like Charles Chaplin or Buster Keaton were people who like were integral to the humor that they created because they were part of the writing teams.
Right.
You know, worked on the material, and whereas Lloyd wasn't really that way. Lloyd was a businessman who, you know, found a character that worked. You know.
I'll say someone like a Joel McHale, from what I've seen on talk shows.
Yeah.
Same deal. Like, yeah. If he's got a bit to do, he'll do it really well, and yeah. He's amazing on Community.
It's nothing wrong with that.
No. Like a good actor. But did you think that she and I forget the other
Olivia
actor,
something or there?
Yeah, I forget. I forget the other actor's name. But do you think they were just goofing, or do you think they had a joke plan that just didn't go off? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
It was like an aside that just didn't hit.
Yeah.
Because you're saying it's then they went, awful.
Oh, we should look at the cue card and read what it says on the thing there. Yeah, you're the yellow writing. Like, it felt...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just kind of...
Yeah. It was just like, oh, that was a joke that just didn't work. Yes. Here we go. All right. Yeah. Moving on. Yeah.
I mean, but very, very few of the jokes didn't work that night. I mean, it was really good.
Like, which is why it was unusual, yeah. And there was no...
The Ryan Gosling...
No, you didn't like that one. Well, my writers wrote it, and I didn't write it. I wrote the funny one. Boo! Yeah, boo, Joe Coy! Boo!
But I mean, the Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt, back and forth about Oppenheimer and Barbie, that was really good. That was really well
I was watching that, and I went, that's a razor's edge, that one.
Yeah.
That one could maybe not work, but they were charming.
But they're so charming and make it work.
Committing to the bit.
Just this whole thing like covering the microphone and that's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean anyway.
Yeah, and then you know, the I'm Just Ken number was fantastic.
Oh boy, it was fun.
It's weird to have like a funny number as the last number.
Mm.
But like, yeah, it would have to be.
No, it was a good choice, obviously, because it was planned as the crazy. Because everyone's going like, well, Slash was playing electric guitar, but there was another electric guitar player as well. There was two of them.
Oh, is that right?
Spanking their plank there while they were just like riffing away like a couple of maniacs. No, that's fun. That's what it's for. Like, it's just like over the top.
And what movie was that a parody of that they were doing?
Were they doing a parody of a movie?
Yeah, it's the Marilyn Monroe one. Diamonds Are a Girl's Best
Friend. Oh, okay,
friend.
Okay.
I think it's Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Sure, sure.
But like her all in pink and all, like all the guys were dressed the way they are in the Marilyn Monroe
film.
And, you know.
I didn't see that. I didn't recognize that at all. Went over my head.
I recognized it because Madonna did a parody of it in the 80s. Spelled it with a K.
This is when she was on Mask?
Yes. It stood for Madonna Allied Strike Cucumbers. I don't know. It was something that was a C that was a K.
Huh.
But cool. I recognized it from that.
Yeah.
It was just like, geez, it's just blew the roof off the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, for all that sometimes people are like, Barbie's okay. It's like you got both the What I'm Made For song and the I'm Just Ken in the same movie. That's pretty good range.
Yeah.
Good for you, movie.
Sad song, happy song.
Yeah.
They did it all. All the emotions.
Made you laugh, made you cry, made you think, made you buy some Barbie dolls on the way out.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's fine. It was a fine movie. I'm thinking it wasn't in my top 10 probably, but I enjoyed it.
Not your top 10 of the year?
Of the year, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. I wasn't expecting to be in the top 10 of all time, but
fair enough. I'd have to look back. I would have to look back and parse it out, I suppose.
Yeah, I didn't see as many movies as I should have last year.
Mm.
I gotta get on it.
What a movie year it was. That's my feeling about last year. Like, what a good year for movies, yeah. Yeah. Just felt like there was a lot of variety. You know, there's still like superhero movies and stuff, but you know, everyone's complaints about the sort of monolithic superhero dumb. It seemed like, you know, there were a lot of options in there that were very good, if you wanted them.
Now you got me wanting to look up what the top 2024, that's not right, 2023, getting in the future.
Yes, what are the top movies of 2024?
This might be a good time.
Dune?
This might be a good time to remind people we do have in 10 episodes our question episode.
Yes.
And if you want to ask us questions, maybe about movies, then just write us at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com or the normal places. And at the end, we're going to draw a winner, and the winner gets a whole bunch of nice prizes. Past winners, they still talk of it. They are still delighted.
We yes, they are so delighted. They
put on their resumes.
We got our first question today.
Oh, good. Good.
A single question. This person's being very, very careful. They're just like putting all of their eggs in that one basket.
All right, give me
because here's the thing, folks. For each question you ask, this is how the rules go. For each question you ask,
we'll plant a tree.
For each question you ask, you get one chance to win. So if you ask five questions, you get five chances. If you ask one question, you get one chance.
Right.
Just saying.
And every question, we will also donate one joke to Melissa McCarthy for next week or next year's Academy Award.
Next year's Academy Award, yes.
All right.
A couple of jokers here.
Give me a one-word review for each of these movies then.
Okay, if I saw them.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
I'm sure. Okay, and one-word review for Oppenheimer. One sentence.
I did not see Oppenheimer. That's the one movie
I missed. You haven't seen it yet?
No, I missed it.
What?
I really wanted to see it in IMAX. Yeah. And we were trying to coordinate with friends to go see it, and it just never came together, and then it just fell apart, and I was kind of choked about that.
Okay, number two movie. Here's my trivia question. Can you name the full name of the movie?
Okay.
The first
Mission Impossible.
Yeah, and then keep going.
What's the name of the movie?
Second most popular
movie. Sorry. Mission, colon.
Yes.
Impossible.
Dash.
Dash. Dead Reckoning.
Yes.
Part one.
There we go. All right. One sentence. Go.
Mind-blowing. Yeah.
Vroom, vroom, fun.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Tragic. But a great film.
Okay.
How would I say incisive or insightful? One word. It's hard to say one word.
No, not one word. You can do a sentence.
Okay. Well, let me just say that, you know, people talk about the length of it and stuff like that, but I feel like it doesn't feel long when you watch it, and it is a complete revealing of this horrible tragedy that happened, you know? And it's kind of like, it's one of those things, it's kind of like when you watched, Watchmen, the HBO series.
Yes.
And it talked about that attack on that town, this black town, where, you know, white people rode in and just destroyed the town. And obviously, you know, here's people setting up their own economy and having this, you know, successful life. And then, you know, a bunch of jealous, bigoted idiots come in and destroy all that. And we never heard about it. I mean, no. I never heard about that.
And then you heard about it twice that year.
Okay.
Because a Lovecraft Country also did an episode.
That's
about
true.
That.
Yeah, that's right. And so I felt the same way about Killers of the Flower Moon, where, you know, like, it's painful, but we need to, like, open these sores, you know, like, we need to talk about these things, you know. I hope that Canada does, like, a really, you know, deep movie, like, serious, deep movie about residential schools and their effect, you know. I think that's something that we just never take seriously, and we need to talk about it. And it has to be done properly, of course. And, you know, what's great about Scorsese's film is that he doesn't shy away from the violence and things like that, but he doesn't shy away from the tragedy as well. You know, like it just bears everything so that you can't escape it. the finger of blame cannot be escaped.
I think it's interesting you're saying like that we don't take it seriously. I think people do take it seriously, but it's so big, they have no idea.
It's hard to imagine.
It's hard to imagine. You're correct. Yeah. But also how do you fix it? Like, what do you do? Like, it's so big.
Yeah.
How do you even approach it? And if you approach it in any way wrong, shame on you.
Yeah.
And so people don't approach it. And in this case, someone's talking about this and taking a big risk talking about this.
Because
you could do it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there's going to be a whole bunch of backlash, and rightfully so.
Well, I just like the fact that someone as skillful as Scorsese at telling a movie story was allowed to do this. And he did it with, you know, with full cooperation from the Osage people, you know. And I think that, you know, as much as you want, obviously we want representation, we want these people's voices and stuff like that, you know, like, you know, whether it's smoke signals or what, you know, you want to have these chances to have voices, but also it's good if you have someone who's skilled to tell these stories as well, you know, like someone like Scorsese, who can tell this story so well, you know, and work with these people, you know. And like when I say that there should be something about the residential schools, I don't just mean that it should just be like, you know, First Nations based, but just something that's a cooperative effort to try to reveal the story and how its effects, et cetera. And I think that would be an important thing.
Yeah, it's got to be in that situation. People who have expertise, bringing in people, you know, new but with a different perspective on things, and then and teaching them, and hopefully that's where this will go.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Surprising. because it ended without me knowing it was going to end. It's a very good film, obviously. I just watched the first one the other day for the second time.
Yeah. Which is rare for you.
Yes.
You're a one-watch fella.
I'm a one-watch fellow, but I want to watch that one again closer to when the movie's... I thought the movie's coming out more it's coming out sooner, though, so I may have jumped the gun here, but anyway.
Maybe, yeah.
But
Chris Lord and Phil Miller, to me, almost always give you more than you expected
mm-hmm.
from what they do.
Sure.
It's like, well, this sounds like a terrible idea. Oh, wait a second. This is really good. This is way better than it should be. Lego Movie. I'm not seeing that. Well, it's a terrible idea to make a sequel. No, the sequel wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
All right.
I fell asleep.
You shouldn't do a sequel to the Spider-Man movie. Wait. Oh, all right.
No, it's a very good film. And I think it builds on the original story in a way that's works so well, you know, like it's just, you know, get people.
Yeah, it feels, and again, we're talking about more than a sentence, obviously.
Yeah.
Like what I like about it is, you know, you've got one side going, this is the way things have to be. This is canon.
Yeah.
This is the way this has to be. And just a character going, no, I'm going to write my own story. I'm going to make up my own stuff. There's more freedom. You know, it's just like, geez, this is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, people, you know, there's been so many Spider-Man movies that we are used to this. And we've seen Uncle Ben die so many times and variations on this theme. And it's like, no, 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 we don't have to do that. And also, you don't have to have a tragedy to be a hero. You don't have to have that kind of, you know, something horrific happen to motivate you. You can just want to do something for the good of wanting to do something.
I guess he does have Uncle Aaron as part of his... story.
He does, but that's not Uncle Aaron dying is a very Uncle Benny moment. But the Uncle Ben, Aunt May dying moments in other movies are this was someone he admired and you know and wants to, you know, carry on the legacy of the good they've done. Uncle Aaron was a very flawed person and you don't want to, you know, sure. He's just really sad that his uncle has died. But his uncle didn't even really get a lot of redemption at the end. Like, his uncle's only redemption was he didn't kill his nephew.
Yeah, yeah.
He still killed a lot of people and did some really bad shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But he does have, like, a tribute to his uncle at the end of the movie.
Because, yes. Yes, because there
so
were...
He's still...
There were elements of him that were, you know, good.
Yeah.
And in the new movie... He's, you know, got, there's the, his image is on the side of a building,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that same kind of way. Though I don't think the neighborhood knew he was the Prowler.
Keeping it down low.
Yeah, but here's a murderer many times over.
It's a good movie. But...
Barbie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I think it's good. It's not as good as Little Women and definitely not as good as Frances Ha, Noah Baumbach. And
I don't know that one.
It's directed by Noah Baumbach, but it's from a screenplay from Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach with her playing Frances Ha. It's a very good film. It's a great movie about being lost in your youth and then sort of finding your path, which I really like. It's very good. And I think Barbie, I do like that they brought like a certain amount of like adultness to it, you know? Like I do like that it's not just like all goofiness. A lot of goofiness, but it's not all goofiness, you know. That there's a core of seriousness to it, or a core of something to it. So
is it Ryan Gosling? Okay. So here was the gag that I went like, oh, that would have been a good gag, but there's no way you could have done it, and it wouldn't have flown at this point.
Okay.
But you know, at the very end, you know, when Jimmy Kimmel's saying, you know, it's the 50th anniversary of The Godfather. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, you want to have like cut to Ryan in the audience just whispering to Margot Robbie, that was a movie about gangsters, but it was really about capitalism. And just like, I know. And then, ladies and gentlemen, Al Pacino. Because that was a funny scene in the Barbie movie. John Wick, Chapter 4.
Didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
No.
Okay. Did you like any of the previous John Wicks more?
Well, the first one, I think, is quite good, except for the ridiculous scene where he gets captured and they don't kill him right away.
Right.
Because if you capture that person, then you should just shoot him in the head and all your problems are solved, and it's just ridiculous that they don't. Number two, I don't even remember number two very well. It's fine. It's fine. It feels like number two, they kind of up the CGI more. So you get, like, the horse the horse scene and stuff like that. Which
was it motorcycles in the second, or was that the
motorcycles
third?
With a horse? Yeah, which is impossible. Like no horse could act in that scene because they would just be terrified.
As the host of Horse Mysteries, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're a flight animal. They're not. They don't stand around when something threatens them. They run away or as fast as they can.
They're also a flightless animal.
But I just feel like the more they expanded on the world of John Wick, the dumber it got. To the point that by the time we watched the third one, it just felt like, why do you even care to be part of this world? Like, why are you cutting your finger off for these jerks? The
world
is not
our world by that point. Yeah. At all. Like, yeah. It's just like we're all just living in a world where the main industry is assassination.
That's right. It's amazing. It's a miracle we're all alive still. The fourth one, I just...
Like, the idea that every assassin almost in the world is going to be after him is a great way to end the second movie. And needs to just be the end.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, you can't top that.
Yeah.
And just we're going to watch him kill them all. Well, then who gives a shit? He's got to have to lose something. A finger? Fine. But, like, he does it himself. There's no stakes. Who cares?
And then, I mean, maybe there's a scene in the first one where he falls from the balcony down to the dance floor, which would probably kill all of us. But he gets up and walks away. But it's not the ridiculousness of him falling off like a three-story building onto a car and then landing on the ground. Like, I just felt like by that point it's like, well, he's unkillable. Like, why am I worried?
Here's the one thing that I would have liked to have put into one. And you know what? Look, there's a damn TV series.
Yeah.
And there's another movie coming. Things are going to go on forever.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe they will. But like, to me, I think like what you needed for the second movie or the third movie.
Yeah.
Is he's Baba Yaga. He is this legendary character. So they say. That's the thing. So you need some... First of all, it's weird that like these assassins, if they believe that...
Yeah.
You know, then
just shoot him in the head.
Well, yeah. It's like...
You had your chance.
Aren't more scared of him. Yeah, no one's scared of him.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh... Whose dog did you kill?
I can get him. I can do it.
Yeah, everyone in the first movie is like, whose dog did you kill? John Wick's. Oh, shit. Oh, shit, we're fucked. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. And by the end of the second movie, when everyone in the world is like, oh, I can do it. And it's like, well, hey, dum-dum. And then you watch like six guys get killed. Hey, remember how we're all terrified of this guy? But what I would like to have seen... isn't necessarily seeing the older assassin that, you know, he respects.
Yeah.
I would like to see the younger assassins that, like, base their character on him. He's a legend.
Mm.
So to them, this is all they want to be. So they're what he has made.
So you want a scene from The Matrix with all the Smiths fighting?
Well, Neo did not make the Smiths. But...
well, he didn't? When he flew through him, he did.
Okay. Technically... We can bring Steve Scrooge on here, and he can bring his Mr. Smith doll, and we'll all
have a conversation.
But like to see like what you did, you brought this kind of evil in the world of like these other assassins because they want to be like you, and now they're also maybe a little better than you because they're you younger, and now they're coming after you, and it's your fucking fault, not just you're the top gunman, and you're gonna like shoot all the other gunmen, okay. And now you're in a car. Now you're on a horse. Now you're in a boat. Now you're in a plane. Now you're on the desert. Now you're in the bush. Yeah. Now you're falling down the stairs. The stairs was good.
I didn't see. I didn't enjoy any of that.
I like the stairs.
I found that boring. The whole end of the... I found the whole movie kind of boring, actually.
He finally made it up the stairs and then they kicked him down the stairs. Like, oh, you. Yeah, and then I was bored by the end. It was just... like, and on a technicality, I'm like, fuck. Okay, fine. Boo. Fine. Did you see the movie Air?
I didn't see the movie Air.
Okay, then there's no comment on
that. I erred on the side of caution.
That looked like a dumb idea for a movie, and apparently it was good.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean to watch it, but it's one of those things where...
Ben Affleck, he directed it. Ben Affleck keeps coming
out. And Matt Damon, I like Matt Damon.
You keep forgetting that Ben Affleck's a pretty good director, and then all of a sudden, hey, wait a second, Ben Affleck's pretty good. I won an Oscar. I know, yeah, but we forget.
Know. Yeah.
Just keep doing Dunkin' Donuts ads.
The problem with Air is it has that streaming thing of like, oh, you can watch it anytime. So I won't watch it now. I'll watch it later. I can watch it anytime. I was like that with Tetris.
It's off streaming now. What? No!
I was like that with Tetris, and I was like that with Air. And I wish I'd gone to see Blackberry because that one looked really fun. And I just didn't have a...
I can't remember if I've actually seen Blackberry.
Okay.
I remember I wanted to
see it. Jay Baruchel.
Yeah, I know. I know.
With a wig on?
Yep.
For some reason.
I used to write for a young Jay Baruchel, David. Let me tell you about my day. You know, David, I auditioned for a part with Keanu Reeves when I was a kid.
Oh, yes.
David, I got old-timey stories of all of these.
Lucky you still have your finger.
Oh, my gosh, I sure did. Past Lives, did you see that?
I did not see Past Lives.
I really want to see that.
Yeah.
But you did see Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret.
Oh, what a good movie. And what that movie...
Rotten Tomatoes agrees with you, Dave.
And the acting is so good in that film. Like, yes... It's a great story, obviously. We must increase our bust. What girl did not read that story? And I never read the book when I was growing up, but Mary did. And one of the things that changes they made that she was like, oh, that was dumb. But I think it was the name of the club. They changed the name of the girls' club. But anyway.
Was it a name that was more appropriate, not as appropriate now as it was in the 70s?
I don't think. I mean, Mary didn't object to it.
I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I never read the book. Did you read the book?
Nope. Oh, wait. Oh. Yes, I did read
the
book.
You read the book? Okay.
I read basically every Judy Blume book back then.
Oh, I didn't read any. Yeah, no, it's what? And Benny Safdie is really good in it. But the real revelation, and no, she has also a revelation in Game Night, is Rachel McAdams.
Mm.
What a great natural actress she is. Like, she can disinhabit a role, and it feels so real and believable that it's just amazing. Like, I just love her in Game Night, and I loved her in this movie, where her every choice as an actress just felt so real.
Nice.
You know, and the little girl who played Margaret was also really
all right. I'll see that one for sure.
Yeah, you should see it.
This is one I'm probably going to see later tonight. Holdovers.
Yes, that's a very good film. You know, it's a fun film in the sense that Alexander Payne set out to make a 70s movie, but not just like 70s and like, oh, we'll make a movie, you know, where people like a period piece movie. It's not that. It's like everything about the movie feels like the 70s. Like even the name of the production companies have 70s styles logos that show at the beginning of the movie. The film opens with the credits. The credits play over the opening scenes of like the showing the school and stuff like that. So it has all these touches of what a 70s movie would have had, you know? Yeah. But what's also 70s about it is its ethos, you know, its worldview of the movie, you know, like, it's really good. And Paul Giamatti is great. And Davine Joy Randolph really deserved her Oscar for her performance in the film. But also Dominic Sesso, who plays the young boy, he was also really good.
That's great. Alexander Payne went to a Vancouver Film Festival talk that he did.
Okay.
A couple of the directors.
Yeah.
And people asked, what inspires you as a, you know, as a director?
Yeah.
And he just, it's how I make friends. I'm kind of lonely. And so when I'm working on a movie, I'm like hanging out with people because we're all working on a movie.
What a dingo.
So yeah, that's why he writes movies, is so he can hang out with people and have friends. And he really was looking for friends. And like to the point where I talked to him a bit, like, you know, at a different kind of event.
Yeah.
And he was like chatty.
Yeah.
He was like chatty, like, hey, how you doing?
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, he doesn't really come across that way when you see him in interviews.
No, no, he's awkward.
Yeah.
That's right. That's why but in the context of we're all talking about movies, great. But if he was at a regular party, what are you going to talk about? Sports? What are you going to talk about? Politics? Hell no. But, you know, you're at a film festival. Hey, you see that movie? Yeah, I saw that movie. How about this movie? This movie, this movie. That
yeah. I mean, he has an amazing body of work behind him, like Citizen Ruth to you know, all the way through. All his films are amazing, amazing stories. I know people didn't like Downsizing, but I really liked that movie a lot. I really liked it.
I'm going to say it was different and I mean that in a good way, as in like, I don't know where this is going.
No, you don't know where it's going.
What the hell?
And I just like the fact that like this life of like luxury that he was going to lead doesn't happen for him. He has to like make his way in this world.
Yeah.
You know, and Hong, oh, I can't remember her last name now. Shoot. The actress who plays the Vietnamese woman in the film, she's remarkable. That's the first time I saw her acting in a movie. And I thought, wow, this lady knows it. She knows it.
Yeah, now I want to look up
Hong Trao.
I'm looking, buddy. I'm looking. I'm looking as fast as I can.
Sure. She was in an episode of
Hong Chau, you're right.
Hong Chau. Hong Chau. I said it wrong. Hong Chau. Yeah, she was
Christopher Waltz.
She was in Watchmen. She was in the TV series Watchmen. She was in an episode of that show we like so much.
How did I not know that Alexander Payne was married to Sandra Oh? How did I not know that?
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. That's
they're like married now.
No. Oh, okay. Was.
Oh, okay. Was married.
Was. Holy
I guess shit. They met on Sideways.
Oh, I thought you said their marriage must have gone sideways.
Well, that too, but they did meet on Sideways, yeah.
Oh, yeah, about Schmidt.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Nebraska.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Dern is so good.
Oh, yeah.
He's a really good actor, director, I think. Or at least he knows how to hire people who are really good. Like Election, Reese Witherspoon in that, mm-hmm. that movie is so great. It's Tracy Fleck. It's amazing. Amazing performance.
Yeah. He also did an uncredited polish up of Meet the Parents.
Okay.
And he wrote a draft of okay. All right, here we go. See if you can guess this one.
Okay.
Okay, so he wrote a draft of a sequel to an action-packed blockbuster movie.
Okay.
And he wrote the draft of this in 2001. And the original was done by Steven Spielberg. What movie did he write a draft of? Sequel to blockbuster movie.
So is it an Indiana Jones film?
No.
Okay. Blockbuster movie.
That was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of something that would...
He went on to do About Schmidt after that. He wrote this draft for this.
After he got some money in his pocket?
Which is a real fridge to the microwave situation.
So could you tell me what year Steven Spielberg directed the...
Okay, can I tell you what film? What year Steven Spielberg directed the first one?
Yeah, the original film. Yeah.
Sure, let me.
So you wrote this in 2000.
That's a fine. Or? That's a fine question. Let's see. First one. 1993. That's correct. Yes.
I was hoping it would help me.
And then the actual movie did. Yeah, it came out in 2001. So he was writing. He was writing. How was it? He writing a draft of it when it came out in 2001.
Huh.
Huh. Yeah, that makes no sense. Makes but no anyway, sense. He wrote a draft of this, a sequel to Steven Spielberg's big blockbuster, number one movie of the year, 1993. And then he wrote not the second movie in the franchise.
Yeah.
He wrote the third one. They didn't use it. But he wrote a script.
For it. Is it Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jurassic Park 3.
Huh. Well, I could see that if you've already got like all the boom bang action part of it, of the script... That you would want to have his kind of, kind of quirky humor added to it. And I think that would be appealing. But maybe they thought it was too distracting.
The next movie, I'm giving you the 20 of the best
okay, movies. These are the, not best necessarily, but biggest earners or best rated?
These were kind of best rated on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
And I'm taking it easy on you because you're a little ill today.
Thank you.
So, giving a little something to bounce off of.
Okay.
You know what? I got other things on my mind too, so this is good for us. This is fine. This counts as an episode, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem. Did you see that?
Yeah, a lot of fun.
That was very fun.
Yeah, it was better than it should have been.
Yeah. Again, here's the other person who's part of the better than it should have been team: Seth Rogen.
Yeah, yeah.
Seth Rogen makes movies that are better than they should be.
Well, that's true.
Makes TV shows that are better than they should.
He has a good sense of story.
Preacher was better than it should be. That first season.
I didn't watch Preacher. I did watch the part of the first season, but it didn't really connect with me. But yeah, no, that was. A lot of fun. I really liked the way that
Invincible.
They...
Invincible. He's also very good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I really liked how they recorded the turtles, like the kids playing the turtles. I just thought that they had them four together in a room and just let them just goof off, do whatever you want, record it all, and then we'll sort it out. It really...
They sound like they were misbehaving.
They sound unruly. They sound fun. They sound like they're having a good time. And yeah, it really works in the context of the movie.
They didn't sound like adults playing kids.
I wasn't super fond of the animation style. I was a bit too chunky and sometimes a little too... I have to admit, I saw it at the Cottonwood, which is a second run theater, which maybe its bulbs for its projectors aren't the best.
Okay.
So it was a little too dark, but that might have been the symptom of the theater rather than the movie.
All right. Then we got Megan.
That was a lot of. That was a good movie.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
All I know is that my first improv teacher is the first person killed.
Nice.
Lori Dungy.
Good
for her.
She deserves it.
Oh,
in the context of the film. No, I don't deserve to get killed. No, it's a very good movie. They did the thing that I think everyone's trying to do now, which is to try to marry practical and CGI, which I think is like the most effective way of doing all of these sort of special effects, right? You know, when you watch, and I wish that people were in a game. It feels like everyone's against CGI now, and there's like a big kind of trend where it's just like, we didn't use any CGI. No CGI in this movie, which is a lie. Like, all movies have CGI. You can't make a movie now without having CGI in it. It's impossible.
I think there's a worry about AI, and that's like now pushing CGI a little bit into the, you know,
in the defensive mode.
Being bad. Yeah. Though, you know, you had your Dogma 95 stuff back in the day, you know, where it's like, we're not doing nothing. We're doing only what's in this room. Only room tone. And,
I mean, there is worry about AI, but obviously you can't. I mean, it's artists who are worried about AI. Like, I don't think the general public is like too much of a tizzy about it. But people have kind of almost been given this idea that like CGI makes it fake. It's not real. It didn't really happen. It's fake, you know. But even something like Top Gun Maverick, where they were flying in jets and stuff like that, all the jets in the movie are CGI, all of them, because they couldn't get F-18s. The army's not going to give you $500 million planes, whatever they cost, or what, you know, $5 billion planes to fly around for a movie.
Okay.
So they had some older jets that they flew, and then they used those as reference, and they changed them into you know, CGI planes. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the magic of movies, right? From the day of matte paintings, you know, and turning the camera on and off, you know, from the very basic special effects to now, like that's part of movie making. But what's fun about Megan is that it's a combination of puppetry, a young girl, an athletic girl playing, being dressed up as the doll, and then CGI, you know, so you get the different parts of it, but it works really well, you know, and this girl is really flexible and really, you know, there's a great scene where she's chasing a guy in a hallway and she just stops and does this really weird dance.
Yeah.
And it's really effective because it's just creepy, you know. And it's a fun film. It's, you know, everyone's good in it. It has, the little girl from The Haunting of Hill House plays the young girl. I know her as Violet. That's her. I think that's her character's name in Haunting of Hill House. And then the actress who was in Get Out, the honey trap in Get Out. And she's really good. My only complaint about the film is it starts off with the girl with her parents, and they're going on a ski trip, and their parents are fighting with each other, and you're like, is their marriage breaking up? Is this over for them? Like, what's this crazy? And then they get killed. That's like the opening of the movie. So this girl ends up going to her aunt's, and that's kind of how the film starts. And it seems so weird. Like, that's a weird choice to me. Like, why would you have people fighting in a car and then kill them? And you're like, well, maybe this girl's lucky that her parents got killed. Like, this is not going anywhere good. It's just a weird choice. Like, it'd be better to have them, you know, like entertaining her and having some fun and some jokes going back and forth and some family fun. And then they're dead. Then you'd feel the loss. But it's just, it ends in a weird feeling.
Maybe you'd predict it more. Because if you know it's like, you know, sure, going, it's a horror maybe. Movie. So but if a person's going, this is a great trip. I'm having a good time. You know what? I'm going to go for a swim. Hooray!
I mean, there's all kinds of cliches in films, and one reason they're cliches is because they work, you know, and sometimes it's not good to experiment. And I feel like that scene just rang wrong, and I was just like, oh, that's weird. What a weird choice. I didn't ruin the movie, but because it's only like 1 minute of the movie, but you're just kind of like, oh, that's strange.
I'm writing a horror comic right now. And graphic novel.
Ready for EC comics?
And yeah, it is interesting at times going like, before something happens, trying not to, you know, use all the cliches that lead you to that. And for the most part, it's the randomness of you were doing something else.
Yeah.
But like not something that's obviously, you know, the kind of thing you'd see in a movie. Like, sure. You know when the cat's going to jump out easily in the movie. And also trying to like, you know.
I mean, the cat is like, that's
page turns.
The jump scares are a cheap way to get, you know, scares. And I don't think all jump scares are bad. I mean, they can be fun too. But if your movie consists only of jump scares, it's more, I just think sometimes, you know, cliches are pleasing to us, you know. And done well or done in a fun way, it still works. You know, you might be like, oh, that's just like such and such movie. I know, but it's still fun to watch it in a different context. You don't have to watch such and such movie over and over again. You can see this movie and it does something similar. Because the way the actors act, the story itself, it's always going to be slightly different than the previous, you know, iterations of these things. So anyway.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, it'd be interesting in a horror movie. If you had, like, a horror movie, and then there's the thing where you open up the closet, you think the killer's in there, the cat jumps out.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God. And then you just cut to the audience, and everyone's looking relieved, except this one little mouse that's, like, sitting in a chair that's like, Jesus! It's a fucking cat! Oh my God, you didn't tell me!
I didn't see it coming!
Jeez! Oh, I don't need this! There's too much! There's fun, and then there's too much! Go back to killing the people. Blackberry.
Didn't see it. Yeah, we talked about that earlier.
Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
Loved that movie.
Really fun.
But way, once again, better than you thought it would be.
Should have been. Yeah, exactly.
I went into it and I was just kind of like, well, this will be fun. Like, I think because I saw the trailer for it and I was like, oh, this looks fun. This looks like a fun movie. And once again, I mean, it does go into kind of cliched places with like Hugh Grant's character when he does the heel turn. You're like, you know, well, that wasn't unexpected.
Doesn't it feel like Hugh Grant has just like said to his agent, just fun shit?
Yes, that's true. He did say that to his agent. He says, I don't want to do the movies I used to do. I just want to do different things now. And that's great. Great. Good for him. Because he's a really good actor.
Do you know who he's playing in the...
Jane Austen.
Is he playing Jane Austen? Good for him.
It's really a lot of rage.
But do you know about Jerry Seinfeld's Pop-Tart movie?
No.
Okay. So Jerry Seinfeld is making... like the B-movie? He's making a movie about...
Does the Pop-Tart fall in love with a woman?
No, it's the history of Pop-Tarts.
The history of Pop-Tarts?
Yeah.
So it's a documentary or is it...
Yeah, oh, not a documentary, no.
It's like Air, Tetris, Blackberry?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's like the history of Pop-Tarts.
It's called Pop-Tarts.
So he's like, I think the creator of Pop-Tarts, like not Hugh.
Yeah.
But like Jerry Seinfeld's the creator of Pop-Tarts. Fred Armisen is like the head of Kellogg's or whatever.
Okay.
It's got... Oh, they got a good lead. There's another woman who's in it who's really good too. I forget who it is. But Hugh Grant is in it.
Yes.
And he is playing... So in the world of Kellogg's characters, he's playing one of the Kellogg's characters.
Oh, really?
So who is he playing?
Is he playing Thorol Ravenscroft doing Tony the Tiger?
Yes. That's exactly you who know he's what? Playing.
That's great because Thorol Ravenscroft was a handsome man and so is Hugh Grant.
Yeah. So you're going to see at some point, like in a newspaper or something, a picture of like Tony the Tiger with Hugh Grant's head, and that's what that's about.
If you want to see Hugh Grant, a young Hugh Grant in a bonkers film, Lair of the White Worm has been playing on Tubi for a while.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, maybe it's not on... No, I think it is on Tubi. I might be mixed up, though. I think I watched it on Criterion. I think I watched it on Criterion.
Everything is on Tubi.
Yeah.
Talk to Me.
Talk to Me. I probably did not see. What's
the premise is it's a Ouija board... And
I wish I saw that movie.
Okay, well,
it's so hard for me to see horror films because Lisa's not into them.
Okay,
I need to be more forthright and just leave the house in a huff. Yeah,
and then if I'm going to go have an affair and then leave and go see a movie,
or if I'm taking my time, I'll leave in a minute and a half.
Excellent, well done. Boy and the Heron.
Boy and the Heron. You haven't seen it? Well, it's kind of Spirited Away-ish.
Okay,
it's it's a voyage into a very surreal world, a sort of dream world.
Some people I know have not cared for it as much as they thought they would. They were going like, I'm going to love this. I was okay with it.
Well, if you did, I think what it lacks is it lacks the scene in Spirited Away of the girl character. I can't remember her name now, sorry. The girl character going on the tram car to the old lady's house. And just that sequence is where they're just like going along in this tram with these sort of ghost people on this water. And it just gives the movie this great feel of just a sort of breathing room, because it is a very busy movie. Like there's a lot of stuff going on. It's a bathhouse for supernatural spirits. So it's got a lot of stuff happening. And then, The Boy and the Heron though doesn't really have that kind of moment of like, let's just enjoy the beauty of this Hayao Miyazaki landscape and the beautiful. It doesn't really have that to it. It's very frenetic and it's hard to know exactly what it's about. And maybe it's a movie that needs to be watched twice. And all, it kind of, but it's mining what he currently is really interested in, which is his boyhood during World War II. Mm-hmm. That seems to be where all his movies land right now, or if this is his last film, as he's claimed.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to be, though.
No, I doubt it, because what is he going to do, retire?
Smoke.
Hang around the house with his wife?
And smoke.
I was watching something, and he said he'd made an agreement with his wife that he'd be home by 9. So he starts work at 6 in the morning and works till 9 at night, and then he goes home. That was his agreement, when he's not cleaning up litter at a lake. Yeah, I thought it was... I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. And Robert Pattinson, who plays the Heron, is unrecognizable as a voice actor and does a great job.
Oh, that's great.
It's kind of a shame that there are so many other good performances this year, because he did deserve a nod for that performance.
Poor Things. Haven't seen that yet.
Poor Things is a remarkable film from a director who has never made the same movie twice, Yorgos Lanthimos. You know, whether it's Dog Teeth, or is it Dog Teeth? The Lobster, which is still my personal favorite of his movies, The Killing of the Sacred Fawn, or Sacred Deer. All his movies are like bizarre, but bizarre in their own way, like individually bizarre. And this movie is as well. It's an adaptation from a book. It's kind of a Frankenstein story where Willem Dafoe's character is a scientist who had an abused childhood, so he has difficulty understanding normal human interactions. But he finds this woman who's killed herself, but she's pregnant. And so he takes the baby's brain and puts it into her brain and revives her. And I guess the idea is that she'll be like a tabula rasa, like a bare slate, a blank slate, and then she'll relearn. And so it's basically like following Bella, the character played by Emma Stone, as she, you know, escapes the tyranny of men. That's her life, whether it's her father, her forced on her betrothed, the character played by the Hulk.
Mark Ruffalo.
How can I remember Duncan Wediger, his character's name, but not Mark Ruffalo? Mark Ruffalo's character. Each person who comes into her life attempts to control her and dominate her. And it's her own force of personality that protects her. It's a good movie, though. I really, cool. And it's a brave part by Emma Stone. It's really.
And we'll wrap up movies on Godzilla Minus One.
Godzilla Minus One. Why are we wrapping it up? Godzilla Minus One is. Oh wait, we're getting late.
No.
Godzilla
we
Minus.
Do, we can do other ones. It's okay.
Godzilla Minus One. I just thought it was a great change of the old metaphor for Godzilla as being like, instead of being the result of atomic radiation, which is kind of part of the story, it's like more of a comeuppance over World War II than it is a comeuppance over atomic bomb tests. You know what I mean? Like he kind of is a sort of big, figure of guilt. And he just gets bigger and bigger because the guilt is bigger and bigger, you know? And yeah, it's a remarkable story. And the fact that they won special effects at the Oscars, I was very happy that they won because I knew the director had done a lot of the special effects himself, and I think that's very impressive when directors do that. I was a little sad that the creator didn't win because I thought the creator was more creative in its special effects, not necessarily in its use in the film, but just in how they were applied to the movie. I thought the creator was taking a bigger step in terms of
haven't seen that either.
Where if, I haven't watched it either. I just watched an interview with Gareth Edwards, I think his name is, the director, who's consistently disappointed me since Monsters. Like, I saw Monsters when it came out, and I really loved that movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was really great. And then, you know, what did he make after that? Godzilla, this is fine. And then, I don't know what else he made. Rogue One.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought was a movie that felt like it was three different films that had been scotch taped together, and then it ended really nicely. And if the movie had been as good as its ending, it would have been a really good movie, but it never quite reached that height of
the. Well, I've just got a philosophical problem with the ending, and I was like sort of okay with most of the movie, and then the ending lost it completely for me. There was like the torture scene.
Yeah,
was like, oh well, then they're the bad guys too.
Oh, I don't remember that part
no
of
one's
it.
Good. Yeah, yeah. They had like a kind of a squid that was like.
Oh yeah, that's terrible. That's near the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah, that part's near the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that's yeah.
But near the end, it was just like, I guess to me. You know, the whole thing about, and again, it's just a philosophical thing, and it's like, I'm wrong, obviously. But like, you know, when you're told, so anyway, this happened,
yeah,
and then this happened, and then all these people died.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, now here's the real story. Yeah, well, that happened. That happened. Then all the people died.
Yeah.
It was the same thing like to me with like the Han Solo movie. Just like, yeah. He made the Kessel Run and da-da-da-da. Oh, I wonder if he was bullshitting or what was going on.
That
no,
movie,
it was exactly what he said.
Yeah, but that movie was more was more egregious in its attempts to like explain every part of the Han Solo
take
mythology.
All the fun out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Or I think Rogue One, you know, it paint like when it's good, it paints a heroic story of these people
sure.
who sacrifice themselves to get this information off of this planet
yep.
into the hands of the rebels. And yes, they die, but that's part of the bat. You know, that's part of war. You know, that's part of what they walked into. I just wish that the film had been more coherent in how it presented these characters. You know,
I guess like okay, so it then, but then. My problem again philosophically it's my fucking problem. It's such a grounded war movie
yeah.
in space
yeah.
that like then you know which if you then went and that's the end of it like, I would sort of been okay
yeah.
like and they die
yeah.
okay the end you know we know what where it went but then it's like cut to magical space
oh yeah well, we don't like that
with
yeah.
slamming people around
yeah. No,
and
no.
it's like, yeah, you just all set up. Like it was like watching a dramatic thing that set up,
yeah.
you know, a magical world. Like before Lord of the Rings
yeah.
and all the wizards and yeah. all the ghosts and all the everything, this was the grounded reality
yeah, no,
of it was, this.
That was dumb.
Yeah.
It's just fan service.
When you've got like,
yeah.
you know, one person who like believes in the Force and, you know, it's like, yeah, I am one with the Force is with me. Okay, if it's in a world where we don't know if there is a force,
mm-hmm.
Then this is kind of interesting. But there is a fucking force. This is all like their Hitler
yeah.
is a giggling space wizard who can shoot lightning out of his hands. And, you know, we know all the stuff that's going on up there, and it's
great. Well, we know, but they don't know. But yes.
Yeah, that's right. But yes. they don't, and that's the problem too, is like they have no idea what they're fighting for
yeah.
or against. They don't know about the crazy magic that
yeah.
the whole world runs on. And, like, they're setting up, you know, something that's going to be one because a ghost whispers into a kid's ear,
yeah.
you know, use the force. And so this unifying power that's in the universe, you know, flows through the guy and he's able to blow up
yeah.
the Death Star. Okay, but magic, you know, everything will be solved by magic. You know, it's great that you got the plans.
Mm.
Could we have just blown up the thing by magic as well? Or I don't know. It was just...
Well, the magical, I mean, I don't want to get too bogged down in Star Wars minutia, but I do think that the film would have been better if it had just shown Darth Vader being given information that the rebels had received
yep.
a transmission. And then, you know, he says something like, you know, like, we have them now or whatever.
Right.
A kind of
but
echo.
Instead they wanted to have Leia
yeah.
go like, you know, oh, this is all going to work. Oh.
Nope. Nope, we don't need any of that stuff. Yeah, it should have just ended with because it would have been a perfect cut from that to the beginning of the first Star Wars film.
Yeah, to me, tonally, the movie does not fit in as a Star Wars mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I agree.
Okay.
That's what I said. It just has, it, you know, it has a lot of. I just wish the film, like personally,
and then the trailer.
I'm not talking about
like crazy.
I'm not talking about. Well, I don't care about that because when people are making trailers, they're just using footage that no one's had time to edit yet. They're just giving stuff. They said, make a trailer with this.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know what it is. And even the people making the movie don't know what they're going to do. So
They know at certain points. They know when they're bullshitting. And it was bullshitting. It was like, that's not what the movie is. You know, you're going to have, if you're showing me a scene where there's, you know, the lead woman
yeah.
who's there and she's like running to the end of something and then a TIE fighter rises
yeah.
up in front of her. Oh, she's just a regular person. She's
yeah.
going to have to fight a TIE fighter.
Well, that should have been in the movie. Yeah.
That's impressive. That's really something. Well, that's nothing to do with this movie.
Yeah.
Okay, then. And there was just like so much of that
yeah.
through it.
Well, I don't
it was
think...
like, sir, Madam Web. You see three spider women in the trailer. It's like, oh, these will be interesting. Yeah, you've just seen all the spider women that are in. The amount of footage that we have
sure.
in the movie is here.
Yeah.
We're lying to you. This is not what the movie is at all. Mm. It just happens to be. Yeah. We threw in a newspaper that said Spider-Man menace to the city. Oh, is Spider-Man in this? No. How about that newspaper? It's not in there at all. What the fuck?
Oh, really? They did that?
That was in Morbius.
Oh, okay.
That was the Morbius thing. I'll just say real quick. I watched a Michael Keaton interview recently where, you know, they were talking about how much he enjoyed doing the Vulture role, and he really enjoyed doing the scene in the back of the car where it's them without the suits, just like, and he's threatening Peter Parker, and it's just, he was just like really enjoying it. And it was so much fun to do, and all the actors were so good, and it was great. And I'm going to ask you one more question. The end of Morbius. I heard that you don't know really what you were shooting that day. I was like, yeah, no idea. And so I kept asking people, and no one knew. The director didn't know. The producer didn't know. No one knew what we were doing. No one. And even Jared was there, and he was in character. So, like, I couldn't even ask him because he's a vampire. So, no, I just said my lines. No one knew what it was. I still don't know what it was.
Yeah.
Do you know what it was? No. No, no one knows what it was.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, you know, like, I know what you're saying, but I just feel like a lot of that stuff is out of the control of the directors. For instance, with Rogue One, I mean, that movie was taken away from Gareth Edwards and re-edited.
Yeah.
You know, by the brilliant people who are running Star Wars, who clearly have no idea what they're doing, you know, and proved it movie after movie, you know, until they wisely let Jon Favreau run the show instead. You know?
Yeah, I mean, they did so many good things with these characters, or at least one of these characters, in Andor. It was like, oh, that's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a little bit jarring because you're like, use the Force. Somebody use the Force. Does anyone know they use the Force? And it's like, no, there's no way of like getting around this unless you use the Force, because we know the Force is real. You're not using magic. No one's using magic. There's magic around.
But there's, well, let's not go into it. There's reasons. We could argue about it for 2 days.
Okay.
What other movie?
Two more. You Hurt My Feelings.
I didn't see it.
I did. I really liked it. Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And she finds out that her husband didn't like her book that she wrote. She wrote a real big hit book.
Yeah.
And then wrote a second book people didn't care for as much.
Yeah.
And she overhears her husband talking. And it's awkward, but it's a good movie. Very fun. Not fun. It's it was an enjoyable time at the movies going, this is good. Okay. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she shows up in things. She does a really good job consistently. Good for her.
Yes.
And Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yeah, well, of course it's good. It's a fine film.
Yeah, I'm going to say
Is it as good as the first film? Probably not.
No. I don't think it is. And I don't think it's in any way as good as the second film. But I thought it was just a little too, oh, come on. That it's like all the adorable animals just like, way of winds. Look at the stars. You ever think of where we'll go one day? Oh, boy. I'm going to go up and I'm going to be a spaceman. Oh,
kablam.
You know what I like? What? Being alive. Me too. I love taking a deep breath and not having a bunch of bullets in me. But there was, there was still really good stuff in there and a really good villain.
Mm.
But, The adorable squad. Kind of okay.
Overdid it, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, beforehand, when they always would do a thing where, like, before then, it was like, and I guess they're freaks. They are freakish animals, but, you know, James Gunn is good at, these are not likable characters.
Yeah.
And then by the end, you're like, aw, I really like these characters. And you're like, this guy's a little gross. Aw, you just like him by the end. But these ones started just as like, it's a freaking otter. You just, I mean, come on, where are we going from this? And then like, we're going to, you know, some stuff's going to go down. It's like, yeah.
Okay, but quickly go down to the list. We don't talk about them.
Okay, sure. But, so Elvis is May, next? December.
Oh, May, December? That's a really good movie.
Okay. Yeah.
I love the sound. I like the soundtrack for that film was taken from a 1970s movie, so he just lifted the music from it. It's very like melodramatic and over the top.
Oh, okay.
I think he wanted to really kind of set us, kind of put you on the wrong foot when you start watching the movie.
Fallen Leaves.
Not seen it.
All of Us Strangers.
Not seen it.
When Evil Comes.
I haven't seen that one either.
All right. Passages.
Not seen that one. Oh my God.
Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour.
What? Oh no.
And 1001.
Man, no. I guess
there we go.
I guess I got to watch the bottom of this list.
Yeah. Yeah, we got some movies for you to see.
Yeah.
All right. There we go.
I still saw a lot of movies this year. They didn't have bottoms in that list. I thought that movie was very good, too.
Mm.
And a revelation for former Seattle Seahawk running back, whatever his name is. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Sorry. But he is really good. Really funny in that film. And proves that he's a really good improviser.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, they just gave him a scene and he just kind of ran off and did his own thing. And unfortunately, they had to cut it. So they put it in the credits at the end of the movie so that we could see that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. They said it just kind of stopped everything dead. But
okay, I'm going to move on to letters.
We can still
yip-yap afterwards.
We'll see.
But, you know, you got a cold and I got a doctor's appointment. What? That doesn't make sense. You should be having that. You can take my doctor's appointment.
It's just the sniffles.
And everyone. I just got to do a prescription renewal, so everything's fine.
The sniffles and a little achy.
Last week, we asked, what's a thing you recently learned and who's your favorite puppet? There you go. These are good questions.
Yeah.
Just a quick little shout out from Muffin Dumplin. keep on sneaking. Let's go with that
thank you.
First. That's a nice start.
We will keep on sneaking.
In the free world.
In the free world.
Our pal Edward Dragansky says, knobs and tints, man. I almost wet myself. I checked Photoshop. No tint, just hue, saturation, and lightness. You're drunk, Adobe. Go home and play with your knob. My dad went to the Playboy Club once when we were in Chicago. I was very young, and I don't remember this.
Chicago.
Dad's story goes like this. A few co-workers invited Dad to the club after work one evening. Dad was an engineer for Hawthorne, which was in the south side of Chicago. I hear that's the baddest part of town.
It's where bad Leroy Brown lives.
That's correct. Yeah, he's not the baddest guy, though.
He's not?
No.
Oh.
You heard the song, right?
Well, I guess not that carefully.
Well, one day he learned a lesson about messing with the wife of a jealous man.
Oh, okay.
He ended up like a jigsaw piece puzzle with a couple of pieces gone.
poor Leroy Brown.
Yeah. Okay, this week I'm going to remember to send that damn clip of Leroy Brown. Because last week I said, remember Cher... You know, they would have cartoons
or
videos,
yeah.
And then I forgot to give you that, but I did give you, like, a lot of other videos.
Mm.
Okay, back to south side of Chicago. The Playboy Club was on the way home if you went through the city to catch the Northwestern train that took you to the northwest suburbs where we lived. Dad lost track of time when he realized he had about 15 minutes to catch the Northwestern train. Failure to do so meant he'd have to call Mom to drive all the way downtown to get him. It also meant having to wake me up as well. So, Dad flagged a cab down and offered him all the money if he could get him to the train before the last one left the station. Luckily, Dad ran and caught the train just as it was in motion and pulling out of the Northwestern station. I sure hope Dad had a good time. Speaking of Photoshop, I recently learned, and am still learning, how to use neutral filters in Photoshop.
Neural.
God damn it. You're right. When you're right, you're right, and you are right. My neural capacity is very neutral. These filters aren't AI, but they work in a way that gives the user more control with touch-up tools, colorization, and transfer of color and style. Instead of giving prompts and leaving everything to the algorithm like AI, these filters can give you adjustments to work with and allow you to tweak the image yourself. The filters take a little work to pin down and find the right measure to handle, but once you do, it's well worth it. The colorization of black and white has finally been solved. I'll post something I colorize using the neural filters to the Sneaky Dragon Facebook page under this week's episode post. I grew up with the Muppets and Sesame Street, and I have a huge place in my heart for Jim Henson's brilliant contribution to the world of entertainment, but my favorite puppet, hands down, bad pun, goes to the one and only Yoda. Lord, I remember seeing a photo of the 900-year-old Jedi Master in a storybook right before The Empire Strikes Back and thinking, how in the hell is this going to work? I knew they shrouded Yoda in secrecy before Empire, but this photo was in one of the kids' storybooks, and even though it was Yoda, I didn't realize, bless you.
Sorry, I'm starting to fall apart.
I didn't realize it at the time and wasn't, we'll get you through the end of this, and wasn't 100% sure it was him. When I saw him for the first time in Empire, I was mesmerized beyond belief. Going back to the theater repeatedly that summer can be attributed to seeing Yoda over and over again as he became my favorite character. I'm still transfixed as I watch Empire to this day and gave into Yoda being a real character long ago. I truly bought the magic. Have a great weekend, everyone, and best to the sneakers, both domestic and abroad. And remember to check those tints and knobs. Hugs and kisses.
Please do. I think it was 9 people that played Yoda.
Mm.
There's 9 different controllers. having to work in unison to make that character come alive.
Yo, 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 Yoda.
Pretty amazing achievement.
Yo, yo, Yoda. Louise writes.
Louise!
Something I learned recently is that Triscuits are commonly thought... You'll get through this, I swear you will. Are commonly thought to be so named because they have just three ingredients. Wheat, oil, and... I thought she said sand. Wheat, oil, and salt. That makes more sense. But looking into it further, I learned the name is more likely a combination of electricity and biscuit, because the ad from the early 1900s boasted they were the only food item baked with electricity. That's cool.
That's one of my favorite crackers.
Triscuit?
Yeah.
What do you put on it?
Cheese? Yeah.
A little bit of sausage?
Not sausage, but cheese, yeah. I'll put cheese on it.
A little cheese and a little kielbasa?
We'll often have cheese and crackers at night when we're watching TV.
That's nice.
Yeah, just a little plate.
About the Oscars, while Oppenheimer was certainly a worthy best picture, it wasn't my favorite of the 10 nominated movies. I haven't yet seen Maestro or Zone of Interest yet, but my personal top three are number one, Barbie, number two, The Holdovers / American Fiction, and number three, Anatomy of a Fall.
I've not seen Anatomy of a Fall either, but I've seen those other three you said. I thought Barbie was fine. I don't know if I'd put it above The Holdovers, but okay.
Okay. I haven't seen Holdovers yet, but I did enjoy Barbie a lot.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's a fun movie, you know, that has some fun with Barbie dolls.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess girls like it.
Mm-hmm. And not girls. Okay, I cheated there a bit, but if you were voting, what would have been your top three or four? Barbie, Godzilla Minus One, and geez, we were just looking at them. Let me see. What was the other one? Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, because I'm a nerd. So those three.
For me, Zone of Interest, The Holdovers, and American Fiction.
Also, do you agree with me that I'm Just Ken was a better song than What Was I Made For?
Yes.
Yeah, but
But they always vote for the sad one at the Oscars, so yeah. That's just how it goes.
It was a great character-defining comedy song, which led to a great show-stopping musical number.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good video on Rolling Stone's YouTube channel where Mark Ronson talks about coming up with the song and how Slash and Wolfgang von Halen...
I knew that was Wolfgang
ended up playing guitar on it. There. Nice.
Yes.
You know, one thing...
I just like the fact that there is two authentic plank spankers wanking away on their guitars for that. Because it's just so fun. Like, it's just so over the top. Of course, you're going to have, like, for a song like that, you're going to have Slash play.
Yeah.
But then to throw in Ludwig van Halen, it's great.
Okay. And here's something. Hey, Oscars. Are you listening? How you doing? Good to talk to you. Thanks for listening to our show up to this point. Here's something you guys got to do. Let people be able to read the In Memoriam. Don't have it so far away.
Yeah.
We gotta read it.
Yeah.
Come on.
I liked having the singers singing that song.
Sure.
For it. I thought that was really
nice.
And I
was actually okay when sometimes the screen would split into five and you get multiple people like, no, I'm all for that. That's okay.
Yeah.
But so far away.
Yeah.
It's like, no. They gotta be readable. Yeah. Edward Dragansky is back.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, like John Wick. He's not going away. For the first time in years, I was closer than usual to seeing most of the films nominated for the major categories. I regret not seeing Godzilla Minus One, even though I tried. It wasn't a very wide release around me, but I'll catch up to it soon when it's streaming. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I think you will.
I just watched Poor Things only days before the Oscars, and I was captivated by its uniqueness. I've never seen or enjoyed a film like that before. I was almost sure I was going to be put off by it, but I really enjoyed it.
That's good.
Especially Mark Ruffalo, or as Dave calls him, the Hulk.
It was Ed, how could you say that about me?
It was kind of a combo of being there in Bride of Frankenstein during an acid trip. So I was happy to see it was awarded. Yeah. I wasn't at all taken with Barbie, but I get why others are. Gosling does deserve the MVP. For Oscar night itself, he was magnificent. From a nerd perspective, my favorite moment was the DeVito and Schwarzenegger throwdown with Keaton,
that was fun.
AKA Batman. That is pretty much why I watched the Oscars. Yeah, I wanted to see a little thing there where, then later on, of course, the Scarecrow wins Best Actor. How's Batman feel about that? I liked everyone's in a superhero movie. The best actress is Gwen Stacy. Everyone. It's all these references. I also liked the entourage of the five previous winning actors and actresses brought on stage to award the nominees. Way to go, Hollywood. More Sam Rockwell and Robert Downey Jr., please. And if you have time, please explain the end of American Fiction. Haven't seen it yet, so later on. Louise replies, and don't forget to mention Plantation Annihilation. Okay, we've mentioned it. Peter Ayers writes, howdy, sneakerinos. Three things I recently learned. One? Topic of syrup. It turns out that the center of the beautiful logo on the tins of Lyle's Golden Syrup is not just a lion, but a dead lion covered in bees. This is a biblical reference about Samson noticing bees making a hive in a lion's carcass. Out of the strong came forth sweetness, the motto reads. There are rumblings that the logo is changing this year to suit the millennial distaste for pictures of rotting flesh on baked ingredients.
Huh.
Number two. The Kinks Autumn Almanac was written backwards.
Oh.
Ray Davies wrote, this is my street, and I'm never going to leave it bit first. Then he played the, and I'm always going to stay bit backwards, to get both lyrics and melody for It's My Autumn Almanac. Mind-blowing, but verifiably true if you play your copy backwards.
Huh. I just learned that now.
Number three. The Boy is now 4.5 years old, and I'm delighted to report he's at just the right age to start enjoying Asterix.
Nice.
We've been working our way through the books, and I'm loving the challenge of coming up with consistent voices for each of the characters. This is made easy by the strength of characterization. Coming back to Asterix after a decent break, I really appreciate the quality of the acting, something the animated cartoons could never quite pull off, whether in drawing or voice casting.
Huh.
There we go. The new CG Mansions of the Gods is quite something, though. The designs work beautifully in 3D, as should be no surprise given the solidity of Uderzo's draftsmanship.
Uderzo.
Uderzo. Well, there you go. You say Uderzo, I say Uderzo. You are right. I am wrong. Let's drop it. Let's drop it. Drop it. My flaw. Let's call the next sentence starting. And Greg Davies, as the exasperated centurion, is a perfect vocal performance. Oh, yes. The thing I learned. Just a minute. I need a pee break. So, last week we were reading Asterix and the Black Gold, Uderzo, the second solo effort. Get a Fix sends the boys off on a quest for rock oil, or as the Romans call it, petra oleum. Petrol, I had no idea. Quick thing on the Oscars. I was shocked how little coverage was given to Michael Glazer's bold statement on Israel-Palestine.
Oh, it's coming around now.
Whatever one's views, this was far and away the bravest, most radical moment of the evening. And that was Peter Ayers. Thank you.
Interestingly, the awarding to 20 Days in Mariupol was censored in the international broadcast by the Oscars.
Okay.
Didn't want that to go out into the real world, I guess.
My wife has gone viral. Speaking of people with illnesses, my wife has gone viral again today.
Oh, no.
She did a cartoon, editorial cartoon, about Kate Middleton and with a Home Alone kind of jokey thing. And it is kind of exploded a bit in the U.S. and the U.K.
Yes.
And it's been called brutal. And well, it's not. It's not brutal.
Well, there's a lot of pro Megan people and anti Kate people.
Mm.
So you're kind of throwing in your lot with the anti Kate people, I guess, the pro Megan, people. Well, oh, I don't know. I haven't seen it. So
okay,
they've been doing a lot of criticism of Kate for her poor Photoshop abilities. And
right.
Megan wouldn't have done it.
So they put, she has not been seen for a while.
Yes.
And so they put out a picture, the royal family put out a picture with like a happy family, which everyone went, that's suspicious. There's a happy family. And then people went, oh, this is a heavily photoshopped, this makes no sense. So the cartoon that my wife did was kind of a parody of, or a riff on Home Alone, where the kid has these cardboard cutouts going by the window. And so it is Prince William. It's Prince William, right?
That's great.
And he's manipulating like kind of a little puppet going by the window of the person that we're not seeing. And so that was it. And it was like, brutal. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe. No. It's like, to me, and again, you know, I'm defending someone that I care about. But it's like, no, the royal family put out something that was a lie. It was a make-em-up. You know, they put together something that was assembled and wasn't true. And it was like, we, you know, whether or not it's anyone's business, whether or not, you know, anyone's doing okay or not, that's one thing. To me, this is just my opinion. But if you put out something and go, no, they're fine, see? And it's fake, then calling them on, you just gave me something fake. This is a lie. That's the point of the cartoon, is like, they're lying, not it's any of our business what this is. And, you know, but yeah, the UK is saying it's brutal. And that's making a lot of people like send it around. So she was going to do kind of a live kind of back and forth on Instagram today, because it was in the Washington Post.
Okay.
And then we couldn't, because why couldn't we do that, Dave? Why couldn't we go on Instagram and then respond to people talking about the cartoon with the Washington Post?
I have no idea.
Because, David, we're Canadian. Oh. We can't get the Washington Post on Instagram.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Because Facebook has made it so that people can't share news on their platforms.
If you're Canadian, you can't see news, you can't share news, and you can't on Instagram read even the tweets of major new American newspapers.
Yeah.
Or other newspapers. So yeah, she couldn't do that today. So it's, her work is out there getting a lot of talk, but she couldn't read the replies because she couldn't read the Instagram, because we're Canadian right now.
Blah.
Yep. So there you go.
I just wanted to ask Peter a question.
Oh, sure.
Because last week, I think it was last week, he mentioned not having seen Witch Finder General, which is a very good movie with Vincent Price, probably one of his best roles, but he'd seen other parts of what he said was a trilogy with The Wicker Man and The Blood on Satan's Claws. Now, I'd never seen The Blood on Satan's Claws. I started watching it. I've not finished it. So I was watching it on Tubi. And it's very easy.
We need to get sponsored by Tubi.
It's on Tubi. It's crazy. So if anyone's interested in seeing it, it's on Tubi. It's not bad. It's an early 70s British horror film. You know, one of those kind of like The Wicker Man. I know, an independent production. A bunch of long-haired folks out in the woods having a good time with some cameras. But it's a good movie. But I'm curious what this trilogy is that Peter's talking about.
Okay.
So if you could explicate, I would appreciate it. And how do you explicate? That's a good question, right? It involves tinting. No, you go to stinkydragon.com. There you'll find this episode of the show. And underneath it, you'll find a place where you can leave comments. So Peter can say, Dave, this is a trilogy because, I don't know why I said, that was a dot, dot, dot. That was an ellipse, if you can hear it. And that would be, I'm just curious.
Yeah. It's one of the options, yeah, of how to contact it. We'll give them.
Do you want to tell me privately? Do you want to make it a tete-a-tete?
Well, if anyone wants, we should give them the questions as well.
Oh, questions. Okay.
All right.
What's your question?
Well, I'll give, you know,
I have a question.
Hit me with it.
Okay, you asked for it. No, my question is, it's a bit of a me question, not me personally, but our show.
Who's your favorite Dave?
It's your favorite Dave on the show. No, what does your spouse and or significant other think of Stinky Dragon?
Oh.
Do they enjoy it? Do they put up with it? Do they leave the room when it's playing? Let us know.
Okay. I don't know if we've talked about this before. You know, again, we've done 640 episodes. Is that right?
41. 41. This will be 41.
41.
We're almost done. So let's consider it done.
There you are. I did a cartoon. I do like a kind of almost daily cartoon about stuff, you know, that I've been going through. And one of the things I wrote about yesterday and Drew was walking by a convenience store and talking about, when I was broke. And a lot of people started writing in with, like, what they did for food at times of their lives when they were broke, like, okay, what their staples were.
Yeah.
And one of the things I would do is, like, there was an Army and Navy near my college, and they had, like, 3-for-1 hot dogs. So that would be, like, some place that I would go for that. And other people had, like, just a really quick recipes that they would make, their cheap things. So When you've been broke, what is your go-to? What is your staples? What is your, hey, you know, this lasts a long time. I buy a bunch of rice. I buy a bunch of beans. I mix those two together. Mm. I got a thing I call rice and beans.
That's smart. That's a smart way to do it.
That was my wife's thing. Was she kind of basically survived on rice and beans during like rough times.
Sure.
But like, what was your thing? And it can be going to the 7-Eleven and getting there. You know, two hamburgers for a dollar or whatever it was. A couple of people brought that up, and I remembered, oh, yeah, I used to do that as well.
I have never done that.
So when you were broke, yeah, well, I don't think you've had that time when you were, like, out, like, living on your own or living, you know.
No,
the it was, only... like, so broke that it was, like, because, you know, you've had to, like, bring food to a family that was nutritious, and you couldn't just have pancake mix.
When I was on the road selling books, yeah, then I had to, like... make do with very little money.
Right.
And that's when Scotch Buy, Kraft Dinner or mac and cheese came in handy. It was 25 cents a box.
And you would make it in the hotel room?
Yeah.
Wow.
We'd have kitchenettes.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good.
We planned that because, you know, we just didn't have a lot of money. None of us had a lot of money. So it was just cheaper for us to fix our own dinners and stuff like that.
Sure. All right. That's good.
Yeah. And if you overboil the noodles a little bit, it feels like you're getting more.
I was wondering if you boiled the noodles in the coffee pot.
Why?
Oh, because if you had a traditional hotel room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It would be the only thing that you could like actually boil something in.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, we had a kitchenette. Most times we had a kitchenette.
Okay.
That worked.
But please continue with the different ways that you contact.
Oh, I will. So, yeah. So if you'd like to write us an email, it's sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. Hey, we're on Facebook.
True.
Facebook, spelled M-E-T-A. You can go there. You can find a page called Sneaky Dragon, and you'll be able to contact us there. We thank you for your contributions there, everyone. We're on Twitter, formerly known as X. You can find us there at Sneaky_Dragon. And we're on Tumblr.
Mm.
We're on Tumblr. Tumblr seems to be of interest only to people who listen to refresh my memory. That's fine. That's perfectly
fine. Please listen to refresh my memory. By the time you...
get to Phoenix?
By the time this comes out, you will have heard what the new episode is about. We usually keep it secret until the day, but this is after the day.
That's right.
And it's The Life and Times of Grizzly Adams, and it's one of the funniest episodes. It's really... And if you want to see Grizzly at The Life and Times of Grizzly Adams, it's on YouTube. Good luck.
Is that on Tubi?
Good luck. No, it's not.
I think I told you. I saw it as a kid. My grandmother took me to see it.
It's a heck of a thing.
I have no idea what she thought of it. She wasn't like a very demonstrative person, so she wouldn't have left the theater and gone, "That was terrific." She would have, or even, "That was garbage." She would just been like, "Well, let's go home now."
One of the hosts, Eric's wife, Katie,
yes,
didn't watch the whole thing. She normally watches the whole thing.
Yeah.
She couldn't watch the whole thing. almost all of our significant others bailed hard. but her description, I think, was the most accurate. She went, "This isn't a movie. This is bear content."
Mm.
I was like, "Yeah, it is." Mm. And then as one of the things we learn in it is like, yeah, it was just like footage that they then like try to shove a little bit of a plot in.
Okay.
And not even with the actor that they ended up with. So, yeah, there's a lot to this. But yeah, it's on the movie's on YouTube. It then became a 2-season TV series where they added plot to it. I'd like to see that. That would be interesting. This does not have plot.
When I was looking up names to put in the... in the tags, like the actors and stuff in it, I noticed that there's Grizzly Adams mentions online, and they always have the little R, the little register to show that it's a copyright.
Yeah.
So Grizzly Adams is now a copyright.
Was a person.
It was a person, but now he's a copyright. So he's it's a character that's copyrighted. So don't you go around thinking you can make your own Grizzly Adams movie. Oh, no.
Though, it was interesting. The guy, Dan Haggerty, then became a couple of other Grizzly Adams style characters that were not Grizzly Adams.
When Lisa's dad grew a beard out when he got a little older, I started calling him Grizzly Dadams. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the show this week. I think we're going to call it now because...
All right, you go home, you get a nap.
I need to go home and eat.
Yeah.
And Ian has an appointment with a doctor.
That's right. Whereas, again, the person who's sick is not going to see the doctor. And the person that isn't
Have the common cold.
Yep, so common.
It's so common.
Wish Dave good health.
Yes, wish me good health, everyone. All right.
And, oops, yeah, and sorry. Please send us questions.
And send us questions for the question show. That's right. There's 9 episodes. 9 episodes, everyone. Get your sticker for sending stuff in. Or you can even win the grand prize.
Yep. Dave's virus. We'll put it in a Petri dish. We'll mail it anywhere you want. Not to you. To your enemies.
That's right. All right, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
Cold isn't terrible, but it just—I've been a bit tired and I'm a bit achy.
Yeah, we'll keep it. We'll keep it tight because I do have a—I got a doctor's appointment. something that was really nice was I actually was able to get an appointment. I just wanted to get one for a physical.
Okay.
And I couldn't get one because it was like, you can only get one if you had a family doctor, and there's no family doctors. But
what if you're Olivia Newton-John?
Well, yeah, then she can get a physical. Physical. But they actually hooked me up with next week with my old doctor.
Oh.
Apparently he shows up at the clinic once a week.
Oh, that's good.
On the DL. But, they mentioned me to him and he went, oh, yeah, have him come on by. So that's great.
Oh, that's good.
I'll be able to actually have a sit down with him and go like, hey, you know, this thing with this and this and this. I got like mild sleep apnea. Is that anything to do with this deviated septum that I just found out about last year? And
they have a deviated septum?
Yeah, I found out about that because I was at an ear, nose, and throat doctor.
Do do do. What is it? Na 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 da 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 na na. I don't know how the song goes. You know?
I'm not sure. You got to give me the context.
She can't try. She can't try. Whatever the words are. She can't try. Cocaine! I just know the Eric Clapton one.
Yes.
It's live. The audience is well into it.
But I was getting checked out just because I was having, you know, some ear issues after the concussion.
Okay.
And so he was checking that and he went, you know, since we're here, might as well check your nose. I'm like, okay. So he put a tube down my nose and went, whatever you do, don't sneeze on me. And he was getting mad about it. I'm like, I don't. It's not a choice, brother, but I'll try my best. And so, you know, I was like, okay, yeah, everything seems to be fine. You know you got a deviated septum, right? No, I didn't know that. Well, we don't have time to deal with that now. Okay, bye. Basically, you know, I wouldn't be able to get another appointment with the guy for a year and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, that's just something to find out as you're leaving. No, I didn't know that I got it.
So there's 7 of them. That's what they're called, the septum, I assume.
Yeah, and they run my body.
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, that's how it works. I believe they're fighting sparks in the next book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's what the Catholic school kids told me to do, so you gotta listen to them.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Go to the Denver airport, fight the Illuminati.
Yep. Bless them.
It's nice that kids keep on top of current events. Yeah, really on top of them. maybe two on top of them.
Yep.
Huh.
All right.
All right. Let's start the show.
Okay. If you need a sugar-free lozenge at any point, let me know. I'll get you one.
Okay. Thank you.